Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, you guys, well, before we dive in, let's read our portion. Okay? All right, Yvonne.
Also, you are to command B'nai Yisrael that you are to bring to you pure olive oil beaten for the light to cause a lamp to burn continually. In the tent of meeting, outside the curtain which is before the testimony, Aharon and his sons will set it in order to burn from evening to morning before Yahweh. It will be a statute forever throughout their generations on behalf of B'nai Yisrael. Bring your brother Aharon near his sons from among B'nai Yisrael, so that they may minister to me as Kohanim. Aharon and his sons Nadav and Avihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. You are to make holy garments for your brother Aharon, for splendor and for beauty. You are to speak to all who are skilled, whom I have filled with the spirit of artistry, to make Aharon's garments for consecrating him, so that he may minister to me as a Kohen. Then these are the garments that they are to make: a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a tunic of checkered work, a turban, and a sash. They are to make holy garments for your brother Aharon and his sons, so that he may minister to me as a Kohen. They are to use the gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and fine linen. They are to make the ephod of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and finely twisted linen, the work of the skillful craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces stitched to the two ends, so that it may be joined together. The skillfully woven band which is upon it, with which it is to be bound, is to be made like the design and from the same piece of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and finely twisted linen. You are to take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of B'nai Yisrael, six of their names on one stone and the names of the remaining six on the other stone in the order of their birth. With the work of a gem cutter engraving a seal, etch the two stones in the order of the names of B'nai Yisrael. Make them enclosed in settings of gold. Fasten the two stones upon the shoulder pieces of the ephod, to be memorial stones for B'nai Yisrael. So Aharon is to bear their names before Yahweh on his two shoulders as a reminder. Fashion filigree settings of gold, along with two chains of pure gold, of braided work, and he will attach the chains to the filigree settings. Make a breastplate of judgment, the work of a skillful craftsman. You are to make it like the design of the ephod, of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and finely twisted linen. It is to be square and doubled over, a span in length and a span in width. Set within it four rolls of jewels, a row of ruby, topaz, and emerald for the first row, a turquoise, a sapphire, and a diamond for the second row, a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst for the third, and a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper for the fourth row. They are to be enclosed in gold filigree settings. The stones are to be engraved in the order of the names of B'nai Yisrael, 12 according to their names, like the etchings of a signet seal, one corresponding to each name of the 12 tribes. Also, you are to make upon the breastplate braided chains of wreathed work from pure gold. Forge on the breastplate two rings of gold and fasten the two rings on the two ends of the breastplate. Then attach the two wreathed chains of gold on the two rings at the ends of the breastplate. The other two ends of the chains you are to place on the two settings and put them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod in front. So you are to make two rings of gold and put them on the two ends of the breastplate, on the edge of it that is toward the inner side of the ephod. Also make two gold rings and place them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod underneath, in the front, close to where it is joined, above the artfully woven band of the ephod. Then they will bind the breastplate by its rings to the rings of the ephod with a blue thread, so that it may be on the skillfully woven band of the ephod, and so that the breastplate will not come loose from it. Aharon will bear the names of B'nai Yisrael in the breastplate of judgment on his harp, whenever he enters the holy place, as a continual memorial before Yahweh. Also put the Ha'urim and Hatumim within the breastplate of judgment, So they will be on Aharon's heart when he goes in before Yahweh. Aharon will bear the judgment of Bnei Israel on his heart before Yahweh continually. You are to make the robe of the ephod entirely of blue. It is to have a hole for the head in the center and a binding of woven work around the hole as a collar so that it may not be torn. On the hem of it, you are to make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet all around the hem with golden bells between them. One golden bell and a pomegranate. Then another golden bell and a pomegranate on the hem of the robe all around. It must be worn by Aharon whenever he ministers. The sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place before Yahweh and when he comes out so that he does not die. Also, you are to make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, like the engravings of a seal. Holy to Yahweh. Attach it with a violet cord onto the turban, on the front of the turban, so it will rest on Aharon's forehead, so that Aharon will bear away the iniquity committed regarding the holy things, which Bnei Israel set apart as all their holy gifts. It is always to be on his forehead, so that they may have favor before Yahweh. You are to weave the tunic in checkered work of fine linen. Make a turban of fine linen and make a sash, the work of a color weaver. For Aharon's sons, you are to make tunics, sashes, and headwear for them, for splendor and for beauty. Put them in Aharon, your brother, and on his sons with him, and anoint them, consecrate them, and sanctify them, so that they may minister to me as Kohanim. You are to make linen undergarments for them, to cover the skin of their nakedness, from the hips to the thighs. They are to be worn by Aharon and his sons when they go into the tent of meeting, or when they approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they do not become subject to guilt and die. It is to be a statute forever to him and to his offspring after him.
Thank you, Yvonne. All right, you guys. There's a lot of detail in this portion. It is no different than the last several weeks. It's just a different emphasis, right? So every word that was released to send us into tonight about focus on the detail, attention to detail, it's more than the practical pay attention. It is about Yahweh's character being made known, and there are things that are revealed. There are mysteries to uncover when you take the time to dive into detail, right? So in order to move into this portion, I first want to go back over a couple highlights from last week's Torah portion and the teaching that was given, because it really helps set a platform for what we're going to uncover tonight. Okay, so a couple of things that were released last week at Hanukkah was this concept of brat versus manhood. Does everyone remember that word? Brat meaning entitled one versus walking as a son. Okay? Wanting the benefit of sonship, but not wanting to walk as one. But if you aren't a son, you can't be a king or a priest, right? So that was a positioning for us that also brought connection to why the spirit of adoption has been released over us, so that on earth we can understand and experience what heaven has to say about sonship, right? And the significance it has for our role as we're established as kings and priests who will serve him and make a way for him on earth. Okay? All right, so that was one of the concepts that was shared last week. Obviously, tonight we're talking about priesthood. So there's a huge connection, and if it applies to us personally as well, then we have to move from a place of sonship into maturity where we can be raised up also as priests. Okay? All right. We also talked about the requirement to walk and live a new way as a king, a priest, and a son. So that was referencing Hebrews 10, where we had for the last couple of weeks, we had that picture of the tabernacle, And literally, Yeshua being the way and the way in, and everything that you bypass, not bypass, but everything that you have to step into, and pointing to it like it's here. It's obviously not here anymore. But we had a drawing of the layout of the tabernacle. Yes?
Yes.
And so there's this prophetic picture, though, as to how we walk through that way by living a new way. So this is then this grounding in the word of everything that Yahweh's established in us, in this house, as to why the law, his instructions, still matter, right? Why they aren't irrelevant. And that Yeshua is not in competition with the law, right? He didn't come because the law needed to be deemed no longer relevant or necessary. He came to make a way. Okay. We also talked about salvation, the difference between salvation and holiness, right? He came for salvation. The law is what leads us to live a covenant holy life. Okay. All right. When it comes to details, this has been taught on the last several weeks, but it's going to be added to tonight. That what has been done, well, I'm taking us back a little bit. What has been done, we're having our ninth year birthday coming up. What has been done all along the way is getting us to a place where the things that were once deemed irrelevant, the aspects of who he is and what he asks of his people, that they're no longer dismissed, right? So the level of detail that we're moving into is all revelatory, meaning it all matters. Amber said that in her opening. It all matters, because what is also clear in the word is that when we have a mindset of it doesn't matter, it is a doorway or an access point to the beginning of death. If he is the way, the truth, and the life, then not adhering to the way, it sets you on a course that is not to be a fulfillment of your life or of the life that he asks you to live. Okay? And so, when we dive into tonight's portion, one of the quotes that I've been carrying around in my mind and in my heart from last week was, if you want him to know your details, right? If you want him to know your details, which we all expect of God, we all expect or even demand that the Father, Yahweh, Adonai, God, that he know every detail, and that he minister to every detail of your life. If he doesn't, he isn't good. If he doesn't, he isn't faithful. So we have an expectation that he get in to know the details of who we are, how we are, but are we willing to do the same? So what Torah portions is affording us? I had this, doesn't seem like it should be a revelation because it's pretty obvious, but I had this deepening of understanding of why we are following in such order through the word. Because we then don't get to pick and choose what's relevant and what's not. Because that's all I've ever known, is what applies to my life. What applies to this season of my life? What applies to this circumstance? What applies? And then I'm hungry for those things. But again, I'm not positioning myself to pursue what he says is relevant. The attention to his detail in the commands that he gives when it comes to things like building the tabernacle or the garments of the priests is unmatched. It's unmatched. And this is the first season of my life, personally, where I have given it any level of attention. I don't want to even say the attention that it deserves, because I'm not that mature yet. But the attention that I know is the beginning of uncovering the things that are dear to him, right? And that will raise us up in the manner to which we're meant to be raised so that we can fully serve him. Okay, so heading into tonight, especially when I start to reread certain sections, because I'm gonna mirror what mom and dad have been doing, which is what I did last time I taught the portion, and I'm gonna go through in sections. So as I go through in sections, and we've been reading this portion in our personal time all week this week, and everyone's like, maybe this isn't our mindset, but I'm tired of hearing about the robe, and I'm tired of hearing about the hems, and it's twisted this, whatever, the colors, that remember that everything matters, and if we're going to understand, we have to look at it again and again and again, okay? Especially in this season before we move into what's next, because we are only going through one portion each week, and while that gives us more time than we've ever had before, because a lot of what we're studying, I would pretty confidently say that most of us have not really fully invested our time and our energy into understanding, right? Okay, or at least in the sense of how does this apply? Why do these details matter to you? We haven't asked those kinds of questions. And so if you look at it that way, 1 week, one teaching is a drop in the bucket of what there is to uncover, which also is exciting because we have a lifetime to continue uncovering who and how he is, right? So that we can emulate it. Okay. All right. So this Torah portion, we start with, well, I'll read it in just a second. But the name of this portion means you shall command. Did everybody find that? Which I think is already, see, this is what I mean. I'm going to try not to go through every single word, but there is so much that these are details that we bypass or deem irrelevant when he says, these are my commands. So, if Yahweh has some instructions to give, I'm going to assume that they are incredibly significant and important because they're commands. So we need to pay attention. All right. So we're going to start at verse 20, chapter 27. Also, you are to command B'nai Israel that they are to bring to you pure olive oil beaten for the light, to cause a lamp to burn continually. In the tent of meeting, outside the curtain, which is before the testimony, Aaron and his sons will set it in order to burn from evening to morning before Adonai. It will be a statute forever throughout their generations on behalf of B'nai Israel. Okay, so we're going to break down a couple different aspects of this verse. All right, so first of all, we're introduced to the priesthood, right? So Aaron and his sons are specifically called out or set apart, and we now have priests amongst B'nai Israel. So going back, they have walked out what? Their deliverance, right? They have walked out their deliverance as a company of people, and what was it unto? This is a huge shift we have to make sure we hold on to in our personal lives. Was it on behalf of their freedom? On behalf of the joy that comes with not being a slave? On behalf of what?
Yahweh said, so that you will worship me, so that they will worship me, right? And his heart to dwell with his people. Okay, so they walk out this journey of deliverance, and now we've been watching Yahweh begin to set some things in order amongst the people. We saw elders, we saw Moshe elevated into a different role of intercession over the people when the battle came, right? When the Amalekites came, we have seen him bring structure to the people. And now that the tabernacle is being built, he is setting Aaron and his sons and their generations after them apart unto the priesthood. Okay? All right. So the task is to keep the lamp burning. But there is a task for the people, for all of the people of B'nai Israel. What was the task? Yes, to provide the oil. Okay? To provide, let's see, to bring to you pure olive oil beaten for the light. This reminded me so much of every single time we have ever talked about press. Yeah. Press, pressure, any process that we've had to walk out over the course of these 9 years that Yahweh called this set apart people to go back to the original intent, that it has been press after press after press. And there's something so prophetic here as well about the people being the ones that provide for that lamp, for that light to be continuous. Right? That they are the ones that are pressing the purity out of the oil. It feels like what we're called to and what we'll continuously be called to, especially when the Messiah comes and then we are called to carry that light eternally, right? Or continuously, we carry that, and it comes from that same press in us. All right, so where it was located. So in the tent of meeting, outside the curtain, try to visualize the drawing that we had of the tabernacle, okay? All right, in the tent of meeting, outside the curtain, which is before the testimony. So the lamp was to be placed in the tent, which was another name for the tabernacle, in the tent of meeting. It was to stand outside the veil, which is before the testimony. The veil is what separated, right, the holy place from the Holy of Holies. And being outside means that the lamp was in the tent and not in the actual holy place where the ark was. Okay? The veil stood before the testimony, which we know held... I'm trying to get us to move in what we've been taught. So feel free to answer, okay? But the instructions, the commandments, okay? All right. So those were placed in the ark in the Holy of Holies. The veil separated it from the rest of the tent, which contained the lampstand. So when I was visualizing this, according to the drawing that we were given last week, because we had it on our phone. Does everyone remember? We were sent a copy on Kingdom Heirs. Okay. So in that picture, if you work your way through how they were directed to place the light, it would be lighting the way to the entrance to the place of the mercy seat and the law. Inside the Holy of Holies. So yes, there's practical implications to the light. I mean, the priests had to perform their duties, right? So there had to be something lighting up the area so that they could do what they needed to do. But it's about so much more than that, because it's about the details. Where it's placed. Where would the light be shining? What would it be illuminating? Right? Okay. So it was lighting the way to the entrance to the place of the mercy seat and the law, which we know is, again, arcing between the Old Testament and the New Testament, trying to break down that mindset. It is a light unto our path. Right? Okay. All right. All right, I'm trying not to read every single thing, but I kind of want to. I just think it helps to break it down. Okay, so if we move into Exodus 28, bring your brother Aaron near with his sons from among B'nai Israel so that they may minister to me as Kohanim. Aaron and his sons, you are to make holy garments for your brother Aaron for splendor and for beauty. Okay, I want to stop for a second. So there are three different times that Yahweh, when he is explaining or giving these directions to Moshe, that he says, minister unto me. Did you guys notice that? Repeatedly. Is Yahweh a God who misspeaks? Is he a God who forgets that he already said something and so he says it again? Yeah. No, he's not us. he's not us. So what is the significance of that commandment being repeated? Three times, minister to be. When we talk about deliverance and everything, hi Regina, when we talk about deliverance and what it is unto, that shift in our in us coming out of everything that we have in Christianity, where we will use what has been done so that we can live freely, right? So it's unto me. Your death is unto me. Your life was unto me. Your act of deliverance was unto me. Salvation unto me. Right? Okay. So there's a, my thought is there is a reminder here of ministering unto the Lord, because they are, the people are having to remember or be reminded what they were delivered unto. All right, then he starts to give, to talk about the holy garments. Okay. And what I think is incredible about the holy garments, well, there's a lot, but first, what we hear is for splendor and for beauty, that Yahweh would be concerned with the beauty of a thing. And we're going to dive into that a lot tonight. What, why? What does that mean? Why such detail? Why such instruction? Why do colors matter? Why does the way that something is physically created matter? Why does it have to be a certain thickness? Why are things where they physically are on the garment? We're going to get into that. But to start with Yahweh expressing for splendor and for beauty, there is a nature of holiness that is being communicated. When Yahweh has led us through an understanding of his holiness, he is speaking to our positioning. Right? One of the things that we've talked about is the more he reveals himself, the more it reveals who you are in relationship to him. Right? it can sound kind of self-deprecating, maybe, to say the holier he is, the more I realize I'm not. Right? But that's only because things have to be fully set in order for you to become like him. Because if you are splendor and you are beauty without him, then what are you really? Right? So all of this that we're working through is about our familiarity and the reverence and fear of the Lord that he's trying to reawaken and birth in us. Because it took a long time, and we're still working through the effects of it, but it took us a long time to dethrone ourselves and give him his rightful seat. Yeah. Right? Through our pride, through religious mindsets, it has taken time for us to just give ourselves fully over to him. Yeah. Because what we believed about salvation is you are free now to live your life any way you please. So I was the king of my own life.
Right?
Right? Yeah. Right? If I don't understand his holiness and then I don't understand that I am not, I am going to compare myself to him in a way that does not allow him to be God.
Right.
It's the reality to that word that was released over the house about know your place. Okay. That does not mean that we are not set apart. We are. It's about what you're set apart unto.
Right.
And how to be set apart. Just as Aaron and his sons are being set apart, but in what manner and on behalf of whom? Not for their personal splendor, not so that they can obtain power, but so that he can be ministered to. And there is a way and there is a means by which he is ministered to. And because we are not holy, it looks a certain way. There are some things that he is setting back in order. Okay. So once he tells Moshe that you're to make holy garments for your brother, for splendor and for beauty, then he talks about those who are skilled. Did that redefine some things in your life?
Yeah.
That verse alone stopped me for quite some time in my personal process where I thought, okay, you are to speak to all who are skilled, who I have filled with the spirit of artistry, to make Aaron's garments for consecrating him, so that he may minister to me. How many times do we say, oh, I do this for the Lord? Right? Like, that's why I, this hobby or this, and I'm not trying to, you know, push down. I'm trying to pull out what he has by his spirit created you to carry and release unto him. But is it unto him? I mean, this is speaking to your purpose. This is speaking to creation. This is speaking to, you know, that there are things in you that he has filled for a purpose unto him. And it is like this blanket bumper sticker, I don't know, like saying where we're, oh, yes, I serve the Lord in all of the things I do in my life. You know,
right.
When it's like, okay, if we didn't have an understanding of what it means to truly serve him, because we didn't even understand what he fully gave his life for and that I'm supposed to follow in the tearing of my flesh so that everything I desire can be laid down, can be crucified with him so that I only want to serve him, then I'm pretty sure we aren't serving him with the skills and the talents that he gave us.
Yeah.
At least not to the fullest of our ability.
Yeah.
Right? That may be our heart and that may be our intention, but we simply can't if we don't understand our place.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. This also, all who are skilled, speaks to a mindset that Yahweh's been dealing with in-house, and I'm sure in the remnant as a whole, but it speaks to this mindset of the best we have to offer.
Yeah.
How long everything makes sense now on the other side of the greatest lie. I'm telling you everything that we have been yes, mom, yes, dad, and doing. I'm like, oh, the best we have to offer. Okay, when I prepare a meal or when I host the environment or when I, which we're going to talk about a little bit more later, about hosting, like hosting a place where he dwells and resides and wants to meet you. Whose idea was that? To start hosting the environment? I mean, really, like think about all of the things that we have been saying, okay, we'll do that. And then there's understanding that comes. We are in the thick of so much understanding to the things that we have said yes to because we're looking at the details. Okay, so all who are skilled, speaking to the intentionality and best we have to offer. He's not saying, just throw it together.
Yeah.
Don't think through it in advance. Don't, you know, whatever you have lying around, it'll work. Whatever size, you know, we can adjust it later. This is extreme intentionality, and it is only for those who he created to be able to put their hands to a thing. And we're going to see more of that as we get further along into the portion two, where you see everyone have a role, which should set some things, hopefully, ablaze in you when it comes to your role. Okay. All right, so all who are skilled. I could go on about that one, but we're going to move on. All right, so then he gets into the garments that they're to make. A breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a tunic of checkered work, a turban, and a sash. Again, he ends that kind of introduction to what's going to be asked of them to make with, so that he may minister to me. Okay. Then at the end of this section in verse 5, they're to use the gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and fine linen. So that verbiage to me indicates that they are using the same. Oh, I forgot. They're using the same materials that they used to make the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so like making of the curtains. I mean, they're not saying get this, get that, use the. This is a continued instruction from the building of the tabernacle into, okay, now this is what I need from you. This is what I'm commanding of you. So it's the same resources. One of the things I was saying I missed was more about all who are skilled. So we can get back to that at the end, but I really just want to release over you the role that you have to play. What has he filled your spirit with? This wording is so powerful. Whom I have filled with the spirit of. What has he filled? Write this down. What has he filled your spirit with? Have you sought it out? If you have and you've discovered it, is it unto him? personalize this, we are inserted into this portion, and there are some things we're still, remember, we do not compartmentalize. We don't go from revelation to revelation. We forget what we've been taught. It's an adding to. We are still getting our houses in order. Okay? So I see this as a part of that because this is the house that he's getting in order. And there are things in the inner workings of your house that he wants you to mother and to father unto him. Okay, back to instructions for the garments. So to use the gold, etc., same materials used to make the tabernacle. One thing that's interesting here, or that I thought was interesting, is the priestly, the instructions for the priestly garments, if they're given with the instructions for the tabernacle, then it's hard to compartmentalize that they're separate, which we have a tendency to do. Like, okay, now we're talking about clothes. You know, like, we're talking about a structure. We're talking about building. Now we're talking about an outfit. No, that's not what's happening. These are continued commands, instructions for a sacred tool to be used within his dwelling place. So they're for his dwelling place, not necessarily the priest himself. Although, yes, it sets the priest apart. It lets people know, you know, who is interceding on their behalf and all of those things. But it's an overflow of the way that we are to dwell with him. I can't imagine this was a stop in my study time where I thought through all of the details I had already read and realized I wasn't like halfway through the chapter. And I thought, okay, what would I do? What would I do with that level of instruction, which then brought me to everything we practice again, where it was like, oh, that's why we do what we do. But I can't imagine, because these are commands that have to be followed to a T, or else what? But I mean, you would die in his presence. There wouldn't be an intercessor for the nation. I mean, it made me think about what are the instructions he gives me in my life that are detailed that I'm like, the details don't matter. Yeah. When if these details didn't matter to Moshe, or if they didn't matter to Aaron and his sons, or if they didn't matter to the people who had to get the oil, and they were like, I don't need pure oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I mean, every single piece of instruction mattered and was all completely dependent on one another. What if the skilled craftsman decided, I don't want to invest as much time as that specific direction is going to give me? You know, like, imagine Moshe giving these directions to the skilled craftsman, and he's like, okay, so I need you to make, and he goes through these details, just like in the tabernacle, and he was to decide, I've got better things to do. I know how to make that in a way that it'll get done in half the time. Or I could get that, or I don't want to take that work on myself, so I'm going to pretend I'm not a skilled craftsman. I mean, I was going through all of these different scenarios because of the life I live, just going through all these different scenarios of how I could continue to live a lifestyle of dismissing or minimizing or deeming the details irrelevant. Oh,
that's good.
That was my pause. Then I came back around. I was like, okay, I can learn though. I can learn how. All right, so then we move into the specific garments. So the first garment that scripture brings us to as far as the instructions to make it is the ephod. Okay. I'm going to read the directions. Oh, and just so you guys know, there's a little caricature on there. I asked Ellen if she could just find something to give us a visual that was pretty consistent, at least with scripture. And so if you guys want to have a visual, I'm sure people Googled it and were trying to find their own images as well. But there are so many that here's one for you guys to look at. And it kind of has the different explanations for you. But as we get into these details. Okay, so the ephod of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and finely twisted linen, the work of the skillful craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces stitched to the two ends, so you can see that, stitched to the two ends so that it may be joined together. The skillfully woven band, I love that he continues to emphasize the quality in which everything is to be constructed and designed. It's not, I mean, he knows we need accountability and reminders. At least that's how I'm hearing it. I'm like, right, skillfully. Don't get complacent. Don't get lazy. Don't cut corners. Don't dismiss the details that I said were so important because it's a week later and I'm like, is it still?
Yeah. Great.
Okay. So the skillfully woven band, which is upon it, with which it is to be bound, is to be made like the design and from the same piece of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and finely twisted linen. You are to make two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of Bnei Israel. Six of their names on one stone and the names of the remaining six on the other in the order of their birth. With the work of a gem cutter, engraving a seal. Here's another roll. Okay? Not just anyone can be a gem cutter.
Yeah.
The work of a gem cutter, engraving a seal, etch the two stones in the order of the names of Bnei Israel. Make them enclosed in settings of gold. Fasten the two stones upon the shoulder pieces. There's the shoulder pieces of the ephod to be memorial stones for Bnei Israel. So Aaron is to bear their names before Adonai on his two shoulders as a reminder. Fashion filigree settings of gold along with two chains of pure gold of braided work, and you will attach the chains to the filigree settings. Okay, so those are the instructions for the ephod. I feel like I say it different every time. All right, bear the names as a reminder. What did that make you guys think of? I can share if it made you think of anything. What was it?
Like a graveyard or a
tomb. Yeah. Anything else that you think of? Okay. My question, clearly I ask a lot of questions in my personal, John's like, yes, in my personal relationship. I'm like, wait, a reminder to who? Because, again, not compartmentalizing revelation or truth, who needs reminding? Does Yahweh need a visual reminder? I mean, I'm sincerely asking, does Yahweh need a visual reminder of the 12 tribes that he created? And that he set apart, right? And that he said for generation after generation, you are my people. The 12 tribes that the Messiah would come from, did he need to be reminded? No. And remembrance also has to do with loyalty, right? And when we remember, or when we're reminded to stay loyal, it's a part of us coming out of our self-serving nature where we recognize, just like everything else in here, that it is unto him and on behalf of a nation, right? That your life, this is a little bit of a tangent, but that your life, just like when we stop at salvation, because he's done it all for me, right? It's not about or for you.
Yeah. Right?
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, bearing their names as a reminder, but then he bore the names on his shoulders. Immediately makes me think of, yes, we're going to talk about that at the end when we talk through the roles of the high priest, because I want us to carry the role that we're meant to as we learn to become priests, but in multiplication, or as the ones who follow Yeshua as the high priest. So we will get to that. But it made me think of that intercession bearing the weight on his shoulders, which means there's a weight I'm meant to bear.
Yeah.
Right? Again, the untwisting of scripture that I can bear it because of him, not that I'm meant to be fully alleviated from responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I have nothing to carry. I have nothing to bear because he did it all. No. You have a role and you have a responsibility, and there is something that you are to be reminded to carry that is resting on your shoulders, and you can because you are yoked and you are bound to him. It's a tangent. All right. So that's our first garment. Then the second garment, so obviously you guys see that's what is on top, right? That's the ephod. That's on top. Okay? All right. So the second garment in order of scripture is the breastplate of judgment. What I noticed is that these instructions, the breastplate of judgment, are the longest. Did you guys see that? There is more instruction given than any other element of the priestly garments to the breastplate of judgment than there is to any of the others. I'm gonna read it. Make a breastplate of judgment, the work of a skillful craftsman. You are to make it like the design of the ephod, of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and finely twisted linen. It is to be square and doubled over, a span in length and a span in width. Do you guys know span is an actual measurement? Some people knew. You knew that? I didn't know that. I've always thought of like a span in time or a span. I thought it was like a, I don't know, like a saying, like, you know, I didn't realize it was a literal measurement. I feel like I'm the only one that didn't know that. But anyways, just speaking more to detail. So it wasn't, yeah, whatever fits, right? Just like with the tabernacle, these are the metals I want you to use. These are the cubits. You know, all of those parts of scripture that were like, oh my gosh, cubits, cubits, cubits. And then we don't, you know, but they're so intentional. Okay. Span in length and a span in width. Set within it four rows of jewels. We've got all the jewels. So you can see that there. They are to be enclosed in gold filigree settings. The stones are to be engraved in the order of the names of Bnei Israel. 12 according to their names, like the etchings of a signet seal, one corresponding to each name of the 12 tribes. Okay. So this image to me is like it's like women that have those birthstone rings. You know, like the rings of all of their kids. They have a birthstone of each of their kids. My mom has one that was her mom's. And it's got all of her siblings, and her mom gave it to her, and it's like winding like this because they had so many children. So it takes up, you know, half of her finger, but it's got all of these different birthstones on it. And so, anyways, that the picture that we have is like this, like birthstone covering over on the outside of what he's wearing. And I mean, it makes me receive how this is just a part, but how precious to Yahweh and for his glory, his creation, his sons and daughters, you know, are. But as a continual memorial before Adonai. Okay, now the next part I am still very curious about, because I couldn't really find a solid answer to what these are. But it is, you all know what I'm talking about. I just lost where it was. Verse 30. Oh, I missed a part. I missed a super important part, which I'm going to speak to more when we get into the role of the high priest. But obviously, at the end of verse 29, when we move into the Urim and Thummim within the breastplate of judgment, that's what I was saying. I couldn't find a, like, what are they? How exactly did they function? What exactly did they do? I understand that they are objects that were tucked in, but they're objects that had something to do with his actual will, like communicating his will. I read some theories, I read some thoughts, but scripture doesn't necessarily tell us exactly how that was done or how that worked. But they were objects to determine the will of the Lord. They meant lights and perfections. That's the meaning of those two words. Lights and perfections.
They're perfections?
Uh-huh. They're mentioned in a couple different places in scripture. They're referenced, but not really explained how they were used. They're mentioned multiple times. So kind of interesting. But at the end of that verse, when it talks about they will be on Aaron's heart when he goes in before Adonai, Aaron will bear the judgment of B'nai Israel on his heart before Adonai continually. What does that make you think of? I couldn't hear you. Mm-hmm. That's something else we'll dive into in the role of the high priest. But his responsibility in executing Yahweh's judgment, especially as he represents the nation. Which, when I was saying, who does that make you think of? I was Yeshua. All right. Okay. Then we move into the third garment, which is the robe. You are to make the robe of the ephod entirely of blue. It is to have a hole for the head in the center and a binding of woven work around the hole as a collar so that it may not be torn. Again, no defect. The quality, the standard. But there's more to it not being torn than just that. In scripture, priests are instructed not to tear their robes. Mm-hmm. Right? This is absolutely speaking to, again, his holiness and our condition. What's required of entering his presence. It was making me think of how we will justify, I'm just going to leave it. How we will justify our condition based on the salvation, the gift of salvation that we've been given, and we won't walk out the process to become holy and righteous like him in response to our salvation. right? That I can, my garments can be torn. I can the condition that we are in when we present ourselves to Him in life, in general.
Yeah.
And it's always excusable. But is it? Okay. On the hem of it, you are to make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet all around the hem with golden bells between them, one golden bell and a pomegranate, then another golden bell and a pomegranate on the hem of the rope all around. So there's a couple different ways that that's seen. Some people have thought, well, maybe it's like sewn into the garment. And then others have felt like, well, the bells worked. They were literal bells. So it must have been hanging from the garment. So that makes sense in my brain a little bit more. So this picture is the bells and the pomegranates are actually hanging. And I don't even know what to think about the bells. What it says is the sound will be heard when he goes in to the holy place before Adonai and when he comes out so that he does not die. Something else that I had read, some other translations say, and he does not die. Not so he does not die. So there's two different, and I don't know that it necessarily matters, but it was helping me truly understand what presence was he entering where there needed to be either an alert or a notification that he's entering and that he's moving through the tabernacle performing his duties. It's like it strips us of the familiarity that we have, which is a huge, that is the heart for tonight as far as our takeaway as a family, is that we would be stripped of the familiarity that we've carried when it comes to His nature and our relationship with Him and entering His presence and using our voice before Him. And we have been allowed to create such a narrative with the work of Yeshua that has given us permission to completely minimize His power, Yahweh's power and authority. And here, diving into the details, it's like you minister incorrectly, or you don't alert your presence. Or even one resource that I read said, if they heard the bells stop making noise, then they knew he died, so they could pull him out. I mean, that's the presence of the Lord that we will completely diminish because we have all the access. What happens when you have access? What happens over time when you have access? You take that access for granted. And you begin to put yourself in a place, again, going back to the word about knowing your place and everything that he's doing to set things back in order when it comes to our relationship with him and the way we relate to him. He's not your buddy.
Yeah.
Get it.
Well, right? I mean, I understand that the word says that we can be a friend to Yahweh. I understand that he called Abraham. This is a tangent. But we have so minimized Yeshua to then, like, as a pal, that we don't let him point us to the Father, who is full of power and glory and majesty and might and could kill you.
Yeah.
We don't care. Right? And we're not meant to be afraid of him. We know that fearing the Lord means that you are drawn closer because you walk in such reverence and awareness of who he is.
Uh-huh. Right.
And that can't come when you've got a buddy pal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You are not the same. We are not the same. Okay, so this part of the word, so that he does not die, is all about his holiness and our condition and for us seeing that breaking down of familiarity. And if ministering improperly, there are going to be ways as the remnant, as his bride, that he will command us in the ways that we are to minister to him, where every detail matters, but also where a new type of reverence and fear of the Lord will come to where we cannot minister improperly. There has been so much grace on our improper ministering. We ministered to him in holidays that had nothing to do with him. We've ministered to him. I mean, think about, that's just one example, but think about all of the ways that we say, this is me ministering unto the Lord. And he's like, I don't even know your name.
Yeah.
Let alone that you are ministering to me. Okay, the fourth and fifth garments, the turban and the sash. The turban had a gold plate. You see the gold plate there? It doesn't have the inscription on there. That said, holy to Adonai. Holy meaning set apart, right? There's multiple definitions to holy, but holy meaning set apart. But Aaron is only set apart. This is important in the spirit. Aaron is only set apart because Yahweh is holy. The more we come under his instructions and submit to our identity as being set apart ones, you cannot forget that the only reason you are set apart is because he is holy. You are not set apart for any other reason, and you cannot be set apart out of your own authority. You do not set yourself apart. And in Yahweh setting Aaron apart, he is then granted authority. Because Yahweh is holy. This authority is pretty powerful. The authority that he's given, let me read it. 28:36. Okay. So it will rest on Aaron's forehead so that Aaron will bear away the iniquity committed regarding the holy things, which B'nai Israel set apart as all their holy gifts. It is always to be on his forehead so that they may have favor before Adonai. There's a lot of stipulations here for that authority to remain his. Again, meaning it is not his authority. It's Yahweh's. But in obedience and honoring these details, he's given the authority to make things. So the people are setting things apart to present as offerings and as sacrifices, right? But even then, there's still, it's like the things that I give him, even to the best of my ability, still have to be covered by his grace because I'm not holy. So he would sanctify any impurity in their sacrifice or in their offering. As long as he followed instructions, right? Because it says, for them to have favor before Adonai, it's always to be on his forehead. Yeah. Which is a powerful truth about the authority or the power we want to walk in. But when we try to set ourselves apart, just like I was speaking to before, and conjure up our own authority, or the minute it becomes an authority that's not submitted fully to him, favor, blessing, it's gone. That authority isn't ours. Which is important to remember, because the more we submit to his instructions and we walk as being set apart, there will be an authority that's gained. And the temptation of our flesh will be, look at my authority. Okay. All right. Verses 39 through 41. Now we get to the sixth garment, which is the tunic. Okay. You are to weave the tunic in checkered work of fine linen, make a turban of fine linen, and make a sash, the work of a color weaver. Another roll. We haven't heard color weaver before. I mean, that was just so coming alive to me throughout all of this. Like, am I supposed to be a color weaver? Am I supposed to be, like, the one who knows how to, the signet? You know, like, what am I? Anyway. I lost my spot. Okay, the work of a color weaver. For Aaron's sons, you are to make tunics, sashes, and headwear for them, for splendor and for beauty. So there is a distinction here, garments of the high priest, and then garments of the priests, right? Which are Aaron's sons. Put them on Aaron your brother, and on his sons with him, and anoint them, consecrate them, and sanctify them. Again, so that they may minister to me as Kohanim. Now, the tunic is what's underneath everything. So the tunic is the white part that you see. Okay? Those are like undergarments, essentially, because they were covering the rest of their body. So there's a lot of layers. You've got the three layers there, but the tunic is the undergarment. And what I thought was kind of crazy is, it feels a little bit of a casual, like, introduction to the tunic compared to everything else. But then at the very end, it says, they are to be worn by Aaron and his sons when they go into the tent of meeting or when they approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they do not become subject to guilt and die.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah.
That's an important piece.
Yeah.
That's an important piece. And I don't fully understand. I have like a layer as to why those were so important. But okay, so we are coming out of attachments to paganism, right? And his people were coming out of attachments to paganism,
yeah.
Pagan worship. They were servants under a pagan culture in Egypt, right?
Yeah.
One of the ways in pagan worship is nudity and sexual immorality. So there is a connection between a purity of worship and being cloaked or clothed that is in direct opposition to pagan ritual and pagan worship. It kind of reminded me of like the pendulum swing, you know, where Yahweh will take you from a place, and because he's taking you from a place, he's like, I need you to go all the way over here. Right? So that's what it made me think of. But that was common in worship of pagan gods and goddesses. We've talked before about different holidays that the church has adopted, right? That the Roman Catholic Church has adopted, or the church in general. And a lot of these were promoting fertility or abundance. So they would see connections between, you know, different types of sexual acts, and fertility, or things like that. So it was worship, or being naked and earth, and, you know, so there's a lot of different ones that I read about. Ancient Greece, ancient Rome, Baal worship, all had connections to that kind of like expression to their gods and goddesses in worship. And so I thought that the way that I saw it, like I said, was this is about a purity unto me. And so there has to be a reason why it was such a strict commandment that was upon penalty of death. Like Yahweh is getting, I'm sure there is so much more to it and to those tunics, but to me it feels like a getting things in order and making his standards known. Okay. All right. We have been through the whole chapter. So we've gone through it in detail, as much detail as at least I'm in a place to uncover. but there are some things that I want to just release over us from the word and from these details for us to carry and make ours as we continue allowing Yahweh's character to be made known and Yeshua's character to be made known. Okay? All right. So the significance of the garments, clearly it is about so much more than just I want my priests to look nice, right? Not that there's not an aspect to, I mean, the way that Yahweh creates things is for beauty, right? He's a detailed creator, so he creates things to be beautiful because they reflect his nature. At least that's the intention, right? Why aren't flowers ugly? Why do they appeal to us? Why? I'm using flowers as an example. Obviously, there's lots of other things. I happen to love flowers and see him in flowers. But there's a purpose to making things beautiful, right? At the same time, though, the significance of the garments, just like the tabernacle, all highlight his holiness, his character, his redemption. And because it highlights his holiness, just like we spoke to before, it establishes order in the context or the nature of our relationship with him. It positions us, or it should, his holiness should position you in relationship. Right? If, I mean, we are coming out of familiarity into a fear of the Lord and reverence, and these portions with all of their detail should absolutely point us in that direction. It also, the significance of the garments, every aspect points us to the Messiah. The role of the high priest. and then us also as priests, right? So the question I asked myself that I want to repeat is, what garments, if I am to follow Yeshua, what garments am I cloaked in? Some of these aren't garments. You hear a distinction between garments and adornments, right? Adornments. So I also asked the question, what adornments do I bear? Ask yourself some questions. Present yourself to Yahweh. Personalize the significance of the garments that you also are cloaked in. Then we've got the roles of the high priest. I am still really working through this part because we are just waking up to the fullness of our responsibility, right? So if we're just waking up as the bride to the fullness of our responsibility on earth, that we don't end, things don't end at the cross, then I'm still learning what it means to step into the role that he has for me. And when I look at the roles of the high priest, if that is something I am to emulate, if Yeshua's life and his priesthood is something I am meant to emulate, that means I represent and I honor a nation. I bear their names and their weight on my shoulders. And I don't know how to successfully and wholly do that on behalf of my household continuously, on behalf of this kingdom family continuously, on behalf of Flagstaff, a community continuously, on behalf of his holy nation, Israel, on behalf of a country. I have a long way to go. Owning remembrance. We've talked so much about remembrance, but a role of the high priest to remember, to stay loyal. Loyal to his faithfulness, loyal to his will, loyal to every detail and every instruction. All because I'm bearing that weight and what I'm representing, who I'm representing. The role of the high priest in intercession. We're still having intercession untwisted and re-revealed to us. What does it mean to truly intercede on behalf of? Being trusted to execute Yahweh's judgment. Again, these are roles of the high priest, which means they will become ours. Does anyone feel like they are in a place, in relationship, to execute his judgment?
No.
Rebecca's like, I completely agree.
And stewarding his presence. To not just establish his dwelling place, create, construct, build his dwelling place, but to host it. Gives a deeper understanding for when we host things. right? When we talk about being people who prepare or who make ourselves and an environment ready. The intentionality, the detail that goes into hosting, and we say it's all in preparation for a time when we will be called to host his presence. Not that we don't get to now, but he's continuing to reveal to us what our role will be. So if there's been any element of irritation or stress or laziness or complacency when it comes to hosting and all of the different ways that that can look, it's about learning how to make a way and how to light up that way, how to maintain that way. I mean, think about everything that had to continuously be done. That's coming further in Exodus, all of the additional responsibilities, the incense, the bread. Whose task was it to ensure that all of those elements were prepared? Yeah. It will be your responsibility.
Yeah.
It is now in the spirit and in the ways that he directs us on earth, but one day it will fully be your responsibility. Everything we do now is in preparation for. So when we have a four-night sleepover for Tabernacles, and there's meetings, and there's lists, and there's sign-ups, and there's chores, and there's all, you are the skilled craftsman who gets to practice hosting a place for him to dwell. Whether that's by bringing snacks or sweeping a floor, it gives more depth and understanding to what we do and why. So that was the final role. Stewarding his presence and hosting his place of dwelling. That's it, you guys.
Thank you, Megan.
Got through a detailed chapter. You did good.
Does that help put that chapter into perspective a little bit?
Yeah.
I don't think I got quite that much when I read it. When Megan's talking about the attention to detail and how she's like, just like read through everything. Like she was like, did you guys catch that? I was like, no.
Yeah.
You missed that one. So thank you, Megan, for that. That was really good. We appreciate you taking that on. You know, but that's a lot to just kind of jump into a place to carry, not just a Torah portion, but knowing that we're also carrying now every detail, that was beyond just a Torah portion. So thank you for that. So Megan had mentioned at one point of bringing our best, or knowing what that looks like to bring our best. And tonight is our first fruits in the month of Tevet. I think most of you guys probably read my box, but you guys know that each that our calendar doesn't necessarily match up with the Hebraic calendar. And the Hebraic calendar has different months than ours. So we're in the Hebraic. It's actually lining up perfectly this month. Did you guys see that?
That's kind of cool.
I don't think I've ever seen that line up, but it's like the third of Tevet. Yeah. Well, now I think it's the fourth because they changed to six. But anyway, it's like lining up like day for day. I was like, what? I don't think I've ever seen that. Anyway, so the month of Tevet, had a lot in it, but it's associated with the Hebrew letter Ayin, which points to the eye. It's seeing, it's knowledge to understand, it's to experience, but not to just have knowledge for ourselves, but so that we can take that and obey. Ayin is actually the first letter of the Shema, which, do you guys remember what Mom said that was? Megan was carrying that for a while, but it was like to hear and obey. Like to immediately respond. not just our English translation of like to hear, but to mm-hmm. hear and obey and immediately walk that out. Ayin carries that first place in the Shema. So when we're talking about our perception and how we see, and when she's talked about like bringing our first, the first fruit is supposed to be like our best, right? It's supposed to be like practically it was when they would take their crop and they would take the first fruit of their crop and they would take the best of what they had and they would give that to Adonai. And they would say, this is what I have to offer. This is what I have. This is what is above and beyond. Thank you for blessing me with even more. Thank you for blessing me with beyond what I've known, what I'm used to. And so a first fruits offering was the opportunity to really just be grateful for the abundance of what Yahweh's given us. And so as we're stepping into a month of his righteous indignation and his holy anger, knowing that we're like also just like the Torah portion of stepping into a place and the intentionality that he's calling us to even enter into a place of his presence, knowing that, I mean, obviously we have access. It's not like we're coming from a place of saying like the veil wasn't torn or anything like that, right? Like obviously we have access, but what she's hitting on is the aspect of because we've had access, mm-hmm. then we don't want to get to a place of familiarity where then we don't recognize the intentionality of the bells. Okay. And we don't recognize the intentionality of what they would have to carry when they walked in, or our role now to continue to walk that out. So with the month of Tevet, we want to be intentional with it being a month of being able to really just engage his holy anger and his righteous indignation, where he's like bringing a fullness and he's putting things in order, that our eyes with Ayin, that our sight is lined up with his, and that we're matching what he's putting out and we're bringing our best in that, so that we're continuing to be a reflection of that. So obviously you can do your tithes and offerings, you can put your first fruits in here, and then because it's first fruits, we also have communion. You guys remember that is something that we started only doing on first fruits because we wanted to continue to safeguard that familiarity of what that meant to be able to engage in that. So when your heart's positions are ready to engage in that and you've been able to trade and do all the things that you needed to do, we can head over.
As we finish up gathering our elements, could we just move in a little bit closer as a family? Be so spread out. Well, I know it was already said, it was already clarified, but obviously it's been a couple weeks since we've done communion as a family, and like it was said, a big part of that is really in us safeguarding that familiarity of even in an old system where it was just something that was a regular thing that you did and we didn't know the meaning of, to still safeguard that in us, that even today when we know the meaning of it and we know the significance of it and we've walked through it, we've experienced it, we've tasted and seen firsthand, that we could still become familiar with it. And so as we're engaging in this tonight, what I want us to be thinking about is something that something Megan, you said, and I'm paraphrasing, so you may have to correct me, but you said that there's a nature of holiness that's being communicated in this portion. And we see that in the verbiage and in the explanation and in every detail that's shared. And as we engage in communion tonight, as we bring our night to a close, I want us to have that same mindset and that same posture, that there is a level of holiness that is being communicated and put on display as we engage with communion as a family. The beautiful picture that we have in front of us, that we get to do this together, but knowing that it's not just something we do together, but we know what it's unto. And so be aware of what holiness is being communicated, what holiness is being portrayed here. And don't take this time of communion for granted, but really engage in all that this means and all that this signifies. So if we just as families could take our communion together, and we'll re-engage here in a moment, and then we'll close. All right. a couple things I wanted to just stir up in us and dot connect a little bit before we close tonight. And before I do that, I even want to just make sure that it's emphasized again. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Hansons, for stepping up and stepping into a place to really carry this. I know that there's, when we say it's written on our hearts, it is established, you guys are a family that's representative of that. And we appreciate you, again, just stepping in and stepping up to a place where you can release and carry Yahweh's intentions for the family and for the night. Who was, let me ask a couple questions. Prior to tonight, who was overwhelmed at the detail? It's okay to be honest about that. When you read through it, is it kind of overwhelming? Okay. Who is still overwhelmed now? Now, when I say overwhelmed, that, yeah, absolutely. There's more to come. I want to like shift the mindset when we say overwhelmed, though, because you can be overwhelmed at the text and you could say, this is hard to read. This is so much detail. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to get into. I feel like Yahweh's really shifting our minds and shifting our hearts to be overwhelmed at how beautiful it is. Not to say that there's not still an aspect that there is a level of intention that we have to have when we're diving into the details. That has to be an active pursuit, right? But let Yahweh overwhelm you at how beautiful and how detailed He is. Adonai is, He's one who's detailed no matter what. No matter what way we look at it, no matter how we want to break it down, even if you try to break it down into simpler terms to understand, knowing that even then that understanding is meant to turn us back around to continue to move up in the details, right? Something Megan said was, we're at a place of understanding what all of everything that we've been doing, again, I'm paraphrasing, but understanding what all of it was unto, because of our attention, but understanding that our attention to the details is making sense of what those things were, right? Am I saying that right, Megan?
Yeah.
Okay. So when we had to go through the yes mom, the yes dad, when there was things we didn't understand, when there was things that we were growing in, it's like this detail that's on display and that we're being pressed in is bringing an understanding and a fullness of what was and what is and what's to come. Something that really just continues to hit me when I initially read it, when you continued to hit on it tonight, Megan, but that our attention to His detail ministers to Him, and that there's a command. He commands how to minister to Him.
Yeah.
That's kind of a mind-blowing, when you put it in the example of like our jobs, our workplace, the things that we do, or we can label it and we can say, like, I'm doing this unto the Lord, right? But then it's like, are you? And even just being able to be vulnerable and asking that question is a pretty powerful thing. But then knowing what that opens up and what you can step into from that point. Something I was asking myself in this was, can we as a people, can I as an individual be so tuned into the details that I become skilled? I was thinking of those roles in the Torah portion as a sort of as like a goal or like a benchmark, like beyond being, we talk all the time about being set apart, and beyond being, hear me when I say this, right? Beyond being common, beyond just being average, to show up, you check the box, whatever it is, there were skilled members of a community of, that was a lot of people, right? Think about even the vastness of the nation of Israel, and that there were specific ones that were plucked out who were known for their skill and their level of detail so that they could be contributors to these specific tasks that were in there. Mm-hmm. And so I was asking myself, can I be one that grows in all of this, and can I become skilled so that when the time and when the place comes for Yahweh's intention to be made known, I have the skills to do it?
Yeah.
But that's a process of growing. Those skilled craftsmen didn't, I'm sure they weren't like 10 years old, right? The engravers, I'm sure they weren't just kind of doing whatever, and then all of a sudden it was like, hey, you look like you kind of know what you're doing, right? One thing I was thinking was they didn't get blind Bob and his lazy friend to go do all this stuff. All right? But it's an important thing to understand and walk away from, even just carrying that. Can I grow in this attention to detail and become skilled in it so that Yahweh can, when the time and place is right, that I can be the one that is activated in that, not for my sake, but for his intention to be made public, to be made known, to be put fully on display. Obviously, we are continuing to be set apart, but again, just to reemphasize what was said, it's not set apart for our own sake, so that we can claim the glory of being set apart. If you think about it, the way that we're set apart nowadays is not so glorious, right? Mm-hmm. But how honorable, how humbling, how beautiful is it that being set apart, knowing when you can relinquish and release that draw or that, like you said, Megan, that like our flesh's desire to hold on to it for our own sake, when that's released and he's fully able to work through that, that being set apart really just is like it's like a conduit. It's just a pointing back to him. And a major thing that I want to just make sure that we're always keeping on the forefront of our minds is that this is for the sake of governing these details, the attention to all of the details, being able to ask that question or being confronted with the question, why does it matter? But then being able to work yourself through that, that he's calling us a people to be set apart for the sake of pointing back to him and ultimately governing the things that he has for us to govern. And so knowing that even in the aspect of if you're literally put in a position of oversight and leadership over nations, there's a level of detail and there's a level of intention that has to be walked out with every moment of every day in that. And so I want us to just be able to be postured in that way and carrying those things as we close tonight. We're so thankful for the word that was released and for just another continued call unto detail and being able to carry fully his intentions. And I know that we're a people that's hungry for that and that we're going to continue pursuing that. So be blessed by one another tonight. Engage the word that was released. Don't let it just be a stopping point in the night where we move on and get to move on to the next things that we're excited for. But stay engaged, stay in it.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.
Hey guys, just want to let you know, your life has details, so pay attention to them and make sure you're using your skills for Yahweh.
Oh, that was good.
That was good.